Welcome once again to Word on the Hills with me, Gwyn Scheltema, my co-host Felicity Sidnell-Reed, and our guest this week, Cindy Stone. Each week at this time, we visit with a local author, get an introduction to their work, and perhaps a glimpse into their lives. We ask them what prompts them to write, and give them an opportunity to read from their work. This week, we're very pleased to have Cindy Stone join us. Welcome, Cindy.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Cindy divides her time between writing and practicing as a registered psychotherapist, Ericksonian hypnotherapist, and Reiki master. She is an advanced student of Bagua, an internal martial art, Qigong, and meditation. Cindy has always been fascinated with transformational journeys and the incredible power of the mind. She is the author of The Incidental Guru, Lessons in Healing from a Dog, published by Stuart House and FitzHenry and Whiteside. She co-wrote the screenplay for Expecting, a dramedy directed by Deborah Day with an ensemble cast including Colin Mockery, Deb McGrath, Bob Radicke, and Valerie Buhagar. Cindy's debut novel, Scorpion, from the Myriad series, won Book of the Year from Book Talk Radio in the UK and was chosen as 12 Best Book Picks for 2018 by Spirited Women, Inc. in LA, a global women's empowerment group. Wow. That's quite a thing to happen in such a short time. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So tell us a bit about this book, Scorpion. What is it about?
Well, Scorpion is an epic adventure, and it's about a young, wealthy woman, about 19 years old, who's in first year university, and she's lived a very privileged life. And a year ago, her mother died in a kind of sudden way. So she's depressed and she's disillusioned, and one day, exactly 1 year after her mother died, she's on a New York subway, and she gets pushed from the subway platform into the oncoming subway, and she's saved by a martial artist who just happens to be walking by. And in that moment, she becomes involved in this underworld of martial artists, masters, and Taoist mystics, and very powerful men from secret societies. And they're all vying for a stone that her mother gave her before she died. And she doesn't know that this stone has any power whatsoever, but she put it on that day, and it changed her life. So here's this young woman who has led a privileged life, and now she has tumbled into this crazy world where people want something and she doesn't know what it is.
Cool. So what inspired you to write fiction in the first place?
I love stories. I've loved stories from the time I was a little girl. The first story I read that just changed me was The Secret Garden. I loved that story. It made me feel things that I had never felt before, and I thought, what a beautiful thing to do, to be able to take words and make somebody or allow somebody to feel something that they hadn't felt before and put them in touch with emotions. So that moment really made an impact on me. And then, of course, I became a lifelong reader of amazing books and stories. I loved what it did for me and for my evolution, and I really wanted to write.
Cool. But going back to the, you know, the emotions and the feelings and things, tell us a little bit about your work. Like, why do people go to a psychotherapist?
Oh, there's plenty of reasons to go to a psychotherapist. I do some couple work, and so that's kind of obvious. You know, couples who are struggling about something or they can't quite get it together. I see a lot of people who maybe have anxiety or panic. There's a lot of that in today's world, a lot of sense of disconnection from themselves and from others. Grief work, you know, somebody's died or a marriage has ended. There's so many reasons why people come to psychotherapists, including for spiritual and emotional development. Sometimes people just don't feel right, and they're searching for something and they can't find it. Maybe there's a life transition. So all of these things are part of what a psychotherapist would work with.
So in your first book, not a novel, but The Incidental Guru, Lessons in Healing from a Dog, is that closely related to your work as a therapist?
Yes, it actually made me a better therapist. I had adopted this dog from the pound, who was a street mutt from, you know, that was picked up on a street corner, and he ended up a really strong, powerful, aggressive dog, and he actually bit me. And I had, when I had adopted him, I thought he was just adorable, and I showered him with love and attention and treats and bones and everything. And he just got more and more aggressive with me. It was the craziest thing. And my dog trainer at the time, she said, "Wow, this dog is so out of control. Like, I don't get him." And she introduced me to her dog trainer, who specialized in aggressive dogs. And that whole process actually changed me. It changed the way that I understood psychotherapy. And what I learned was that this dog didn't really need to be loved first. He needed to know that he could trust me. And he needed to trust me like a dog or an animal would, not like a human being would necessarily. So we went through this amazing journey, and as I said, it changed me. I became more whole as a result of it, and my psychotherapy became deeper and more profound, I feel. And he became this amazing, sweet, communicative animal that I could talk to, and he would listen, and people just were astounded at the kind of relationship that really developed together. Mm. And so I wrote the book, and it's about relationships, and it's about, it's uses the story of my dog, but it's about all the relationships that we have with ourselves, with each other, and with our world in general.
Hmm. Interesting. So does any of the psychotherapy or hypnotherapy find its way into your novels, into your storytelling?
Absolutely. I think that you can't really do psychotherapy without it finding its way into everything that you do. And I think, and I'm pretty sure I'm no different than any other writers, that everything that a writer comes in contact with becomes fodder for something at some point, a sentence, a word, an idea, a whole story, a little tiny piece of a story. So yes, it does inform the way that I create characters and I understand characters. And I love, of course, that the transformational arc of a character. And so doing psychotherapy for so many years and watching people change and shift and grow and transform, I do try to step that in the same similar way as characters in a story.
Well, maybe you could read a little to us from Scorpion.
I would love to. So this is chapter one. The visible world is the invisible organization of energy. And that's by Heinz Pagels, the physicist. I despise subways and the crowds that swarm them every hour of every day, like so many rats clambering to squeeze into an abnormally small space. I avoid them now, like I try to avoid the totally annoying Norman the Borman, the wastoid freak my dad always pushes on me. But today, I'd rather face the rats than take an extra second to get home. All day, my body has been buzzing with the strangest sensations, every cell vibrating and my head whirling. I headed towards the busiest part of the platform, wondering why I felt compelled to go smack into the center of hordes of strangers. I touched the pendant I wore for the first time, the stone warm, as if alive with its own pulse. My mother gave it to me the night before she died, exactly 1 year ago today, and I just had to put it on. I needed to feel her close to me. Every painful detail of the day she died is burned into my memory like a bad tattoo. I had reached the subway stairs when my dad called me to say I'd better get home fast. By the time I pushed through the turnstiles and stumbled towards the platform, I no longer heard anything but the excruciating pounding of my heart. I could see the subway buskers, a cellist, violinist, and bassoonist, moving rhythmically while they played. I could see the loudmouthed school kids shouting. I could see the couple ahead of me laughing and talking, completely absorbed in each other. The world moved inside the station in its usual cacophonous way, and my isolation was palpable. I broke into a sweat. Dread seeped into my body from the subway walls. The floor and ceiling closed in around me. I wanted to run, But I had to get home. I had to get to my mom. She couldn't die. She couldn't. I waited. The train didn't come. I waited some more. Panic rooted my limbs to the spot. A muffled announcement came over the loudspeaker. People reacted, but I was stuck, frozen inside my horror. A woman yelled at me when I didn't get out of her way. Her lips moved as she pushed her face right into mine, her eyes flashing rage. I couldn't stand it anymore. I bolted from the platform, back through the people, the buskers, the turnstiles, and ran up onto the street. I ran all the way home, but I knew it was too late. I knew she was already gone. I knew it the moment I left the subway. As if the moment her spirit left her body, mine left along with it. After that day, I could never go in a subway again without dreading the walls, floors, and ceiling steadily creeping towards me, suffocating me. My dad sent me to a therapist who told me what I already knew. He thought he was so clever, telling me I was experiencing an existential crisis. Well, Sherlock, nothing like suddenly losing a mother to a mysterious flu to question the meaning of life. I wished for something to end the soul-numbing boredom of my meaningless existence, but my dead feelings just stretched out before me like an endless gray sky. That's why being on the subway platform today was so bizarre, with all my senses so strangely heightened. I felt things I didn't want to feel, floundering in a sea of bodies, the heat of them pressed into me. I smelled their sweat, even tasted their foul breath. I heard their hearts beat and the blood swish through their veins. The buzzing in my head grew, but I couldn't stop moving forward. Waves of bodies churned, shoving me to the very edge of the platform. Staring down at the train tracks made me dizzy, so I turned and caught sight of an Asian girl, whip-thin and crouched low, ready to pounce. Strands of purple hair stuck to her blood-red lipstick. She leapt with hands outstretched, her coal-rimmed eyes seared into her target, somewhere to the left of me. The train screamed its arrival at the station. As the wiry girl soared towards her mark, she noticed me and twisted in midair, her eyes scorching into mine. Her lips curled into a cruel smile as she reached for my chest, my necklace. My hand shot up to protect myself. She banged into me and knocked me backwards. I shrieked, but no sound came. I reached out for something, anything to stop me from falling. I raked at empty air and turned to see the conductor's eyes, wide in the front window as the train hurtled towards me. The whistle screeched an urgent warning. The brakes squealed, metal on metal. Sparks flew from the tracks as he tried to stop. In the time it takes from one heartbeat to the next, strong, sure hands latched onto my wrists, sending tiny electrical shocks through them. Air whooshed by my face as I was yanked out of the path of the train. Our lips almost brushed as my savior pulled me toward him, his sweet breath dizzying.
Okay. Well, thank you, Cindy. We've been talking with Cindy Stone, author of Scorpion, and we'll chat with her again in a few minutes after this short break.